This is a lot bigger group than I left. Justin got everybody together while I was gone. That's very good work. Funny how things work out. We made all of the trip, all of the journey safely, and then I went to get in the old van to let my chauffeur bring me over here for class, and hit myself in the side of the head with the door, like to knock me over. You know, the scripture says, "He that hath ears to hear, let him watch," I guess, and I didn't. In the last, 3 weeks now, I've had the privilege of helping to remember someone from a marriage 8 months into it, and then yesterday would have been Homer and Joe Jones' 75th wedding anniversary. So we had a big group of people present on Memorial Day to remember them, and we got to see a bunch of people that we lived with 44 years ago, long time ago, and it was sure good to see everybody, and it was good to see them remembering all the same things that we did. It made me think for a minute my memory was still working. It was sweet to see people that were dear to us. We've been reading in our class on Wednesday evening the stories of Jesus. Tell me one of the Lord's stories. That's the way to think about this. And we tried to say a few weeks ago now, this is number 9 in this series. Of course, Justin just did the last two. And we tried to say that Jesus told stories to make things memorable, to make his listeners think. He told the stories mostly to the crowds, often in the presence of his disciples, but to make the crowds think, and to cause people to have to come to their own decision or to come to their own conclusion about spiritual matters. He did not let them lay the responsibility of their choices on him. He makes them make their choices and to be accountable for them. So that's sort of the direction that we've been going with these stories of Jesus. Tonight, our story is from Luke 16. And we want to think for a few minutes about a dishonest manager's wisdom. This is Luke 16, verses 1 through 13. When we started this series, I asked you guys which were your favorite parables, and you had answers that I understood and agreed with. And then I asked you which parables were the hardest for you or the most difficult for you to see the point of. And someone in here said this one. John, it might have been you. I don't remember. The unjust steward, he's known as. The dishonest manager. Someone in here said that. And I agree with that, too. I think this is one of the stories that's puzzling at first when you think about it. This is one where it almost looks like Jesus is commending to us a guy for doing the wrong thing. And that makes it look like Jesus is recommending us to use any means necessary to get what we want. And that's, I hope to try to show tonight, that's not the Lord's point. Remember that in the Gospel of Luke, we've said the parables tend to show the need for the Lord's kingdom, whereas in Matthew, the parables tend to show the nature of the Lord's kingdom. Luke is interested in saying to people, this is why, no matter what you may think on the days when everything is going just like you want it to, this is why you need to be ruled by the Lord. And in this parable is, I think, in the nature of in the direction of that point, why we need the Lord to rule over us. I think it might be helpful with this one to start with a couple of realities before we even read the story. And I think at least this helps me. Sometimes when you read a book, do you kind of look over to see how it turns out? You don't do that if you're reading a suspense novel. I hope you don't. But if you're reading a biography, you might. It helps to kind of know how things turn. In this case, it helps especially. So here are two things that I notice about this. First off, really three things. This is a contrast parable. The lesson is taught not by saying, be like this guy, but by saying, if even a guy like this knows to do this, then surely the Lord's people can see the need for a certain kind of discipline. The second thing, notice it is the man's shrewdness which is commended. We'll come to this in the middle of verse 8 in a few minutes. Or you may find it prudence. It may be translated prudence. Or it may be translated that he acted wisely. That's why I've made reference to his wisdom in our title tonight. That's what's commended, not his dishonest dealing. So bear that in mind before as we read. The Lord is not recommending that you be just as dishonest as this fellow is when it suits your purpose. What he's saying is, this guy knew that something was going to happen, and he had sense enough to get ready for it and to use some ingenuity at it. So it helps to know that. And then third, notice that in this parable, it is not our Lord who commends this guy. It is his master. This fellow is a steward, meaning he is taking care, he's managing another man's goods. And the one who commends him for his shrewdness is not Jesus, but the owner of the goods that he's managing. I think those three things help me to try to imagine my way through his story, and maybe they'll help you too. So remember, it's a parable of contrast. The guy's commended for his shrewdness, and the one who commends him is the fellow he's working for, the one whose steward he is. Now, with that in mind, let's go back and work our way kind of through the story. I've broken it down into four movements, if we can call it that, the movements in this parable. Notice Luke 16 now, verse 1. We'll stop with each. He also said to the disciples. I think that phrase may mean to attach this to what you were studying the last two Wednesday evenings from Luke 15. In those passages, Jesus was answering the people who were criticizing him for receiving sinners. He told three stories: the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the prodigal son. And then he said something to his disciples. He also said to the disciples, there was a rich man who had, ESV translates it, a manager. And charges were brought to him, the rich man, that this manager was wasting his possessions. Now, a manager is someone who is a steward of a caretaker of that which belongs to someone else. A wealthy man might simply leave his goods under someone else's management, and then he would go about his business or his life doing whatever he wanted to do and live off of the other one's management. In this case, his manager is accurately, this is a true accusation, he's accurately accused of squandering the man's goods. All right, I want you to notice that word. So So he's wasted it. He's misused it. In the story of the prodigal son, you remember what the prodigal did with his father's goods in the far country? He squandered them with wild living. In this case, the manager is the one who squanders the goods that belong to the owner. He's accused of that. The word is reported to the owner. Now, verse 2 tells us that this fellow now knows that there's going to be an accounting and he's going to lose his job. He's going to lose his privilege. It says, the rich man called him and said to him, "What is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager." In other words, give an account of your stewardship, because you're about to lose your place. All right, now that becomes an important part of this. Not just that the day of judgment for this steward is coming, but the end of his stewardship is going to happen because the books are not going to balance. And he's going to be found out to have not been doing his job. That leads now to the man, to the steward, the manager's internal discussions, where the guy has a discussion with himself and says, "Self," and remember, like the foolish rich man did, "Soul, you much good. Here it is, steward or manager. You're about to be without a way to have a living. What are you going to do?" So notice verses 3 through 7. "The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do? Since my master has taken the management away from me, I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg.'" That's pretty honest assessment, a guy's self-assessment, isn't it? I'm not strong enough to work, and I have too much pride to beg. What am I going to do? At least he knows he needs to do something. So look what happens now. "I have decided what to do, so that when I am removed from management or stewardship, people may receive me into their houses." What's he doing? He's thought, "Where am I going to live? What am I going to eat? I'm going to have friends." That's what he's thinking to himself. So what I'm going to do is, while I am still a manager, I'm going to use the goods that are still under my management to secure goodwill from friends who can help see after me when the time comes. So, summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to them, now, the picture is they owe the master, but it's the steward who has made the deals with them, and he's the one who's managing all, he's the one they have to answer to. "How much do you owe my master?" He said, 100 measures of oil. 100 measures of oil, from the commentary I can find, says about 900 gallons of olive oil, which was a staple of life at the time for them. He said to him, "Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Cut your debt in half, or just cancel it out just by changing the numbers on the contract." So that's pretty crooked dealings, but if you're the fellow who owed 900 gallons of oil and suddenly it's cut in half, who are you going to be loyal to? The man you owe the money to, or the guy in front of you there who just offered you the deal? So, and this is talking about the ways of the world, obviously. So now it says, verse 7, "Then he said to another, 'How much do you owe?' And he said, 100 measures of wheat." And the comment about that is that that would be between 1,000 and 1,200 bushels of wheat. So significant amount again. "Take your bill and write 80. So you're cutting it again down by a big percentage obligation. All right. So how would you assess what that guy has done right there? He's found out for dishonesty, and now he engages in dishonesty in order to secure some goodwill from somebody for himself, because no one is going to favor a man with his kind of character. So remember, Jesus is not commending that low character. What he says, though, is the master, the owner of those goods, the one whose steward he was, commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. And we'll stop there for a minute at the middle part of verse 8. Now, in looking at that, he's acted wisely. He's used some wisdom. How? What is shrewd about what this guy did? What was prudent about what he did? What was wise acting on his part? In what way was he wise? He got him to pay something. That's part of it. And that way he could say to the owner here, they've paid their debt to you here. That he's done that, but is that the way his wisdom, is that what was wise about this? He took care of himself and for his future in the way that he saw that he could at that time. So look back up in the story and notice, verse 4, I've decided what to do so that when I'm removed from management, people may receive me into their houses. He figured a way to have people who'd be likely to do that for him when the time came. And he imagined a way to do it in circumstances where he did not have a bunch of options. It was an emergency, and he had the shrewd part of it to think of a way when it looked like there wouldn't have been much of a way for him to do it. You have to admire the fact that Jesus is saying, the master, the owner said he had to admire the fact that he had thought that through that much, and the owner might have been thinking, I wish to goodness he had used that kind of ingenuity in making good use of my goods instead of squandering them. What a good steward he would have turned out to be. So that's the movements in the story. Now, if it just ended there, maybe you could go in whatever direction you'd wanted to go and make whatever of it that might come into your mind. But Jesus didn't leave it there. And I want to point this out. Jesus made his point clear, or more specific at least, in verses 8 and 9. What was the Lord's point in telling that parable about the crooked steward whose master at least commended him for his wisdom or prudence or shrewd or wise acting? Well, at the middle of verse 8, after the master's commended the dishonest steward, Jesus said, "For the sons of this world," or the sons of this age, maybe it would be more literally, "are more shrewd," or "act more wisely in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. The New American Standard Version translates this: "The sons of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the sons of light are." So what Jesus is doing, he has taken this situation with this dishonest steward and said, the guy saw his situation and he saw what was coming and he thought it through enough to do something about it, to make friends, to have friends for later on. But the sons of light may get caught up in living for the moment and not give any thought to how they personally need to make friends in dwelling places for later on, to have a welcome later on. So that's the observation. The sons of this age are more shrewd in dealing with the time and opportunity and environment they have than the sons of light often are. The sons of light can end up thinking that they've been saved by a Lord who acted in their behalf, and therefore someone else will do all the preparing for them. And that's not the way it should be. So verse 9 now offers the Lord's instruction based on that observation. He says, "And I tell you," now who's he talking to? Verse 1, who was it? Disciples. He's talking to people who are already following him. "I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous mammon." The ESV translates it unrighteous wealth, as do a number of the other versions. But mammon is the is a Greek, it is a term for money or possessions, the footnote that tells us here. So we're talking about stuff. "So that when it fails," notice not if it fails, but when it fails. Why would it fail? Maybe you have it invested in Bitcoin or something, I don't know. Or maybe it's in dollars. Or maybe it's in the market. Or maybe it is just tied up in a car or something, or a house that is going to wear out and run down and not be anymore. That's just what I know about it failing in itself. Someone might carry it off. Remember, rust, moth, or thief? That's only half the story. Why else might unrighteous wealth fail? The most obvious one we haven't even mentioned. Because I will one of these days. So, and that's the undeniable truth, isn't it? For all of us. So one of these days, the stuff won't be enough. There'll be things that it can't do. And Jesus has made that point in Luke more than once. Make friends for yourselves by this means, so that when it fails, they, those friends, may receive you into the eternal dwellings. Now, isn't that a thought? Sometimes we sing songs about how to be when those who've gone on before us, who are in the Lord, welcome us. This seems to me to be a part that involving that image in a way. Form ties, use the what you have to form ties with people that are going to last beyond this life, so that there'll be welcome and reunion. To put it in that way, it's a wonderful thought. Now, I, in my thinking about this and trying to work through this parable, I want to add one other thought here. I can't prove this, but I think it should be considered. Maybe this is said by the Lord in explaining his own actions, which were brought up back in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 15. So look back there for a moment. I know Justin read this with you. The tax collectors and the sinners were all drawing near to him, to Jesus, and the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. Now, it's not unrighteous wealth that he's using, but it is time and connections with people and the things he did in daily life in this world. Wasn't he, in a way, making friends for eternal dwellings? Wasn't he using his life and his involvement with people and his connections with people and even things like eating his meals to establish ties with people that are going to last beyond this life? I think so. I think he's involved in that project. And in that way, it makes sense to me why it would say in chapter 16, verse 1, he also said to his disciples this. This would explain to them what he's doing in a way that we could that they could use. All right, so comment or question or observation or correction down to this point, anybody? Okay. You already know I couldn't hear you, I suppose. But this is a story, the man's story, and this is the point Jesus gave to that story. And you notice here that Jesus is not saying, I recommend that you be just as crooked as this guy was. I am recommending you be just as imaginative and intellectually alert and thinking about how you get ready for what comes as this guy was. Now, think about how we're like this manager. So I thought about this and trying to work on this. So who in here is managing or using or steward of what belongs to someone else? I'm going to be disappointed if you don't all raise your hands here. Any thought about it? So all of us are like this steward in that we are taking care of what belongs to somebody else, such as what? Our own lives, our whole lives. What else? The things we have, our possessions, obviously, our families, abilities, talents, relationships, things like citizenship, things like the special opportunities, the particular opportunities that each one of us have in our life that not everybody else would have, things like involvement in or the hearing, having heard the gospel and the faith, and having connections with brothers and sisters in the Lord. We're only using what belongs to someone else, namely the Lord's. Where we live or die, we're the Lord's, and we're His stewards in that way. Another way we're like Him. Who in here thinks that this arrangement is going to last forever? How long? Who in here is exercising a stewardship that is unlimited in its duration? And once again, every hand should realize that we know we're not going to continue at this, right? We know that there'll be a day whenever we'll have to surrender our stewardship, and there'll have to be an accounting for how we've managed. That Scripture teaches that from one end to the other, doesn't it? And that's what gives our stewardship meaning, because it's going to be evaluated by the owner. A third way we're like this guy, this is an important one here, and this is maybe the point of this parable. While we are here engaging in this stewardship, we can still do something about how it's going to turn out. Every single one of us has the ability to make some choices about how we will, how who there will be to welcome us, and what kind of friendship ties and so forth will outlast just our journeys here. And then we're like this guy in that it requires some personal consideration and decision. Isn't it interesting that instead of Jesus calling his disciples and telling them how they as individuals would be able to make friends for the eternal dwellings, he tells them a story about a guy who had to figure out how to have friends into whose houses he could go when he lost his stewardship. He wants them to have to think themselves about it and to decide, no, in my situation, with my abilities and my connections and my time and with the privileges I have, what can I do to establish friendships that will inhabit or will welcome me into the eternal dwellings, into verse 9. So in that way, we're all like this guy. We don't have to be like him in the dishonesty that causes him to lose his stewardship. We're going to lose our stewardship just by the nature of our mortality, if nothing else. But we're like him in all of these ways. We're managing what belongs to somebody else. We know that it's a limited job. We can do something about it right now, but we'll have to think and decide about what fits and what works and what would do it for us in our cases. So what would shrewdness look? Define shrewdness for me. I should have started with this probably. What does it mean to be shrewd? All right, David said to be conniving or to be looking for a way out. I think maybe that's the hard edge of shrewdness. Shrewdness involves intelligence, and it involves sound thinking, and it involves maybe imagination and vision that is put to good use. So what might shrewdness look like? Considering what we have in common with the guy, what might shrewdness look like? And I boil it down to three questions. What am I managing? Take an inventory now. What are you managing? What is there that you have the choices about that's under your control? We're not asking now what's other people done to you or what's not been fair. We're talking about what is it now under your control. It may be, as in this parable, it may be the world's wealth. It's called unrighteous mammon because sometimes the world gets it unrighteously. And this steward is an example. And the people who took his deal and just dishonestly cutting their debt in half are examples of why it's unrighteous mammon. What am I managing? What are my assets? All right. More important. What you see in your life is also a part of it. It can be what you have. We named over this list of the possibilities, but you know in your life what you're managing. Ruth? Time is one of the things Ruth said, and that would be a huge one. I have the time I have right now. All right, now, how might I use that which I am managing to make friends for later on? And here is where the work of thought and arriving at a conclusion about what I'll do and all of that, this is where that work is done. If you think about it now, actual, prayerful, diligent, imaginative, personal thought, considering what is under my control, How could I use it to put, how could I put it to good use?
Building bridges.
Well, that's one way with it. Joe Jones's daughter told me she showed me something she posted on her mother's 92nd birthday. Her mother was doing well, and her mother was still quilting and sewing things for the old people. See, she thought what she could do. A lot of you guys have done that over the long time in your life, over the last year or two. Thank you so much for that. You just thought of ways that you could do things on your own. And that's kind of the thing here. What could I do that will have eternal results? And we're not talking about working, earning your salvation. We're talking about friends on the other side of all this. What can I do about that I could do? What can I do about that now, at this moment, this time? And that is one of the ways I think this parable is meant to bless us and could bless us. It could empower us. It could remind us that there are a lot of things are not in our control, but our management is, and we could each individually give some thought to this, and there be a boost of energy in what we're trying to do to get ready for later on that would be a blessing to us in a real way. What am I managing? How might I use it to make friends for later on? And how can I start doing that right now, at this point, even if I don't have a whole bunch of time left? That makes you think, I think. Don't you think? Okay. All right. Now, the Lord doesn't just leave it there. And probably we need to mention this. Time's running out, so we just do it this way. The Lord applies the principle of that parable. He makes the application himself, the principle of the parable he's just told. And he does it in verses 10 through 13. And there are three parts to this, three steps to this, that all is the same principle. But he says in verse 10, one who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much, and one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. At first light, that might seem to you like it's a complete contradiction to what the dishonest steward has done. But if you read it, attaching it to last part of verse 8 and verse 9, and you know that Jesus is recommending that we be shrewd enough to do what we can while we can, then you hear someone saying, but I can't do a bunch, or I can't do everything now at this point. And Jesus is pulling the rug of an excuse out from under us and saying, do what you can. Be faithful in whatever you do have. And then verses 11 and 12, he makes the point that if we're in being faithful with another's wealth, we can come to be entrusted with our own true riches. He says, if then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? Answer, of course, would be nobody. And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you what is your own? So there are true riches, there are things that can be your own, but they're not given to people who won't be faithful in what is entrusted to them. And faithful means trustworthy or dependable. And then the Lord's point comes down to one concluding statement, one main statement that ties this whole line of thought together. Verse 13. No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. You can use money for God. You can use talent for the Lord. You can use time for the Lord. You can use any other blessing in that way. But you're a steward, use it for God and not for that which you're the steward of. That's kind of the challenge of this thought-provoking little parable. It fits in the line of thought in Luke if we approach it in that way. And we'd like next week, Lord willing, to consider the parable at the end of this chapter, the rich man and Lazarus, at least if it is a parable. I know that gets debated a lot, but we'll try to think about it because it seems related to this one here now. This story of Jesus has a point, and it's one that we have to probably grapple with in our lives. That at least gives a way to begin in doing that. Appreciate you guys all for being with us. We hope the three sunny days Travis just promised, or somebody promised a while ago, will happen, and you'll enjoy them. And we look forward to being together on the Lord's Day. Aaron, would you mind to stand and lead us in a prayer from where you are there?